Hello and welcome to
Let's Clear the Air with me, Jess,
and me, Kaylee. Each week we will be exploring a different theme, the hidden meaning behind it and the impact it's had on our culture. Specifically, looking at our favourite eras and the eras that shaped us, the 90s and noughties.
Hello.
Hello, we are back. This is episode 4 now, isn't it?
It's madness. Like, where is the time gone?
How much fun is it doing it in the same room?
I just looked over at you and I was like,
so cool.
Oh my gosh,
we're so live. So we are today,
yeah,
going in, like what we said last week, mm-hmm. Harry Potter. And there's so much to unpack here in a lovely way, because every episode we try and say what something has had an impact on our culture.
Yeah.
And we related to something. And with this, I thought it was really cool, and we spoke about it, to relate Harry Potter to escapism and why it's important as an adult, and keep it quite a positive episode.
Absolutely. Do you want to tell everyone who might not know your obsession with Harry Potter?
It is chronic. So as you see, if you're on our social medias, we have got our Butterbeer cups here. Ching-ching.
Cheers.
Cheers. And when Harry Potter first came out, I was 11, so I was the same age as Harry himself growing up. And I remember my mum was working at the optician's opposite the bookshop, because she hadn't lost her eyesight at that point. So I used to love reading. Before Harry Potter, it was Goosebumps. So I'd sit for hours. My nan would buy me a new book. And for a kid my age, I'd finish it in a couple of hours. Like every single time I had a book, book obsessed. And when I was 11, I'd come back, I walked from school to mum's work, which I did often. Mm. And I'd sit in the back office of the opticians and read, but I'd run out of books, and my best friend Alex, she said, oh, there's this Harry Potter book, have a read. So mum gave me some money to run over to the bookshop. And I'll always remember, I got the first Harry Potter book, and I bought this book bookmark, and it was a worm, so it's like a lace with a worm on top, and I used that. And I opened this book and I got lost in the magic, and I didn't even care that I was sitting at the back of mum's work. I was in. And it kind of sparked that obsession. Then I went through all the books as we grew older, and obviously some of the films came out before the rest of the books had been finished.
Yeah.
And my stepdad used to take me to always go and see Harry Potter when it came out in the cinema, so that became our little thing as
tradition,
well.
Yeah.
And I think when you get a thing, so a magical world that you can go into, and you don't get this very often, but it's the same as Lord of the Rings had that big impact on people, the mm-hmm. Potters had that big impact on people, and it's the escapism. And when we're adults, I feel like we're so told to, you've got to be successful, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. We lose that sense of play.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
And we spoke about that. Men Barbie. Still get it,
but
women
absolutely.
Don't.
Yeah.
And to have something that you can have as that sense of play still, mm-hmm. and takes you out of everything, I think it's really important. And I think that's why I'm still obsessed with Harry Potter, because every time I go back to the studios, every time I read the books, and I reread them all the time,
yeah,
I just get that magic back. And why is it we're told when we're adults we have to lose that?
I don't know.
It gives us such joy.
Exactly. But do you ever find like there's a guilt attached to it? So I'll give you it's really random. I don't know if it will resonate with anyone, but I used to love the swings when I was little.
Yeah.
Like, oh my goodness, the swings were just
monkey
everything.
Bars.
And I just felt like escapism and away, and just looking at everyone. And then the other day I randomly went on a swing, and it's like, it just didn't feel right. I felt like guilty. Like, why am I wasting 20 minutes of my day on a swing? Like, oh, like, you know, and then I felt a little bit dizzy. And then I was like, oh, you know, I'm not meant to, this isn't meant for me anymore. Like, I've gone. But who's telling us that we're gone from that? It's a bit like, have you ever had that when you've gone to the studios or watched Harry Potter, where it kind of relates back to a magical time, but you feel bad still?
I think we get embarrassed, don't we? I think that's the thing. You think, oh my God, people are going to look at me because I'm an adult and I'm a woman. And I think, again, it goes back to that what we spoke to in previous episodes of feeling like you've got it, you know, we've got to have a successful career, run a successful household, and have that extra pressure.
Yeah.
And I think so we feel like we're not doing what we should be doing. But actually, I think we've got it so wrong. What we should be doing is not making people happy, so therefore we shouldn't be doing it.
No, or we've
got
to be changing it.
Right.
Yeah, and going, actually, no, this is not what
I think it goes quite deep in there.
Yeah.
But no, I agree. And I just think, I actually, when I was a kid, I was at Italia Conti, and they used to get these at my third school. Because it's full-time, you do your education there, and then you're dancing, acting, singing in the afternoons. They would often, the Harry Potter studio, the filmmakers would go to the theatre schools like Sylvia Young, Italia Conti, Brit School, and they would take out kids to be in the background. So I actually, cool story, and I will put this clip on our Instagram at let's.clearthe air. a video of me in the background of Potter. And I know, you know, I'm not singing from the rooftop that I was an extra, because it's nothing wrong with it. It's fucking good because you need them. I love how everyone comes together and makes this awesome film. But I find the film industry can be really judgy of that. But I was a kid, so leave me alone.
Yeah, I was told like 80, it was like when I was training, I was like, if you're an extra, you'll always be an extra.
Yeah.
But as a kid, it's just getting experience on set, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And in Harry Potter, the love of my life. Yeah, I'm not good. But it's funny, like now, if you said anyone you're an extra work, no agents would even take you on.
No, literally.
So I'm a kid, leave me alone.
Yeah.
And Tom Ackerley, who is Margot Robbie's husband, was in it. He was in my Saturday school at Italia Conti. So I know Tom Ackerley from when I was a kid. And he always talks about it. Margot loves it. She's always banging on about how Tom was
in
the
background.
Yeah, he's friends with us all. So, you know, I've got pictures of me and Margot Robbie when we were kids, like,
so cool.
About Italia Conti as well.
Post it so everyone can see it.
I will. I've got them all in my cupboard in there.
Still be an extra because big news. I mean, I was fuming when they announced it.
Because
you're a kid and extra, but the fact that they are maybe you'll be one of the roles.
I could be. I'm a teacher now.
You have the possibility of being
in Harry Potter.
In Harry Potter again.
Things are possible.
And every series is doing each book.
And I do believe in the power of thinking things into existence because, okay, bearing in mind I've had a really hard 2 years, let's forget that. Let's go to the positives.
Yeah.
When I got, I posted this the other day on Instagram because it was insane.
Think
about that, right?
Yeah.
So, to fill everyone in, I was at Italia Conti. My theatre school was called Italia Conti. My biggest thing that I love is Harry Potter. I'm obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
So my first big studio job was with the BBC on Strike, Troubled Blood. Now, Troubled Blood and the Strike series is written by J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
My character in Strike was Gloria Conti. See the link of Italia Conti?
Yeah.
So suddenly I was like, wow. Like, how mad...
Manifestation.
...that happened.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really nice coincidence. And I think sometimes when there's hardships going on, it's very easy to get caught in it. And you see what happened to me the last 2 years. I got caught in this web of not feeling so great, health issues, multiple different things going on.
Mm.
But when I hold on to the nice things, I wake up in a better mindset and then it goes on. And I think that's what Potter does for a lot of people. It gives them that escapism to move into it. And also there's so many good messages within Harry Potter. And just before we started, I said a quote from Dumbledore.
Yeah.
And the quote is, "It's our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are far more than our abilities." And that was when Harry was trying to decipher, you know, he's like, I've got these Slytherin traits and I've got these, you know, the scarf from Voldemort, I've got all this. But you choose good or bad with that.
Yeah.
And I think that really represents our society. We all have good and bad in us.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to say that person's really bad or that person's really good. And we found that with the Playboy situation because, you know, Hef did change the racial issues in a certain degree or the AIDS issues. Like, there was issues that he really did make an absolute positive change.
Yeah.
But there was all these bad issues. Not bad, horrendous.
Yeah.
But you see, it's so hard to pick what's good. Mm. And if we always try to find the good and pick the good, maybe the world might just stop war and maybe we find world peace.
Literally. I think it is that very much that thing of like history repeating itself, isn't it, with life? Like, we don't reflect or look back or learn a lot of the time from our mistakes and just keep repeating. And I also think with Harry Potter and what they were able to do, I know for some people, like with the series, that's what people are excited about, like Ginny's character to be fleshed out more because she was so much more in the books than the films. But I think each of us found our person in Harry Potter. So it wasn't, you didn't just have Harry Potter who was the protagonist, who was just really the hero, and you know, that's special because not everyone is born being special. And I know he wasn't for like the first 11 years of his life, but after that, it's always, you know, Potter, you're the chosen one, you're special. And I think obviously that reflects on some people, but a lot of people don't have that. And I think then having your Hermione, who was never meant to go into that world, you know, but actually she just did it from working really hard and books. And she worked hard to be the person
and
she got
her outcome.
Yeah.
And Neville Longbottom was always the silly one, forgetful one, stupid one. Everyone just like, you know, he's just kind of like, that geeky little guy.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he became such a hero at the end because he believed in something.
Yeah. And then you had Ron, who's just like, he was, you know, he was the cheerful one. Mm. He was just like, not cheerful, that's not what I mean, but like the laid back one and a long yeah. friend, just a really good friend. And yeah. like, who wouldn't want a friend like Ron when mm. you're like Harry Potter? Like, they're always, but what I mean is that I think it's one of the only franchises that had such different and fleshed out characters mm-hmm. where you as a person could find
your kind of double.
Yeah, it yeah. wasn't like you were just like, oh yeah, he's great and that's that. You yeah. could find your person, and I yeah. think that's a really big thing for such impressionable children, because at the time that mm. like you said, it went from, I think the first one came out 11, and then the last one came out in, is it 2011? 20
The book.
Jess, no, the film.
What a film, come out. So that, yeah, 2011, you're right. The yeah, Deathly Hallows part two.
So 10 years, you know, for a lot of 11-year-olds to 21, that's such an impressionable time mm-hmm. of your age.
Yeah.
To watch these characters. And like you were saying, it symbolises so many themes and decision-making, and I think probably guided a lot of people with how they chose to live their lives. Do you know what I mean? It kind
completely.
Of had that... oh my God, my words. What is it that you rely... Your conscience. It relied right, yeah. very much was conscience-based and yeah. about the decisions you make and yeah. things like that. And I don't know.
And it gives you just... that... Like, as you grow older, I always say our brains are like a computer. What you put in, you get out. Now, I know when I'm listening to things about the mind and self-help and getting yourself out of a bad time. Mm-hmm. If I put on podcasts like that, which at that time in the moment, yeah. I don't want to. I want yeah, to listen to absolutely. True crime. And yeah. I spiral. Yeah. If I wake up and I go, today I need to listen to Dr. Joe Dispenza because I need to change my thought process because mm-hmm. something's gone wrong here.
Yeah.
My life starts to go better. So we all have that conscious choice, but we're yeah. sometimes unaware of it.
Completely.
And when we're inputting things where, from a child, where you get to see that acted out, you can then become aware a bit easier. So you're very much aware that Harry had the chance to be bad. Mm. He had the Slytherin... where you can talk to snakes. He had these traits that Voldemort possessed.
Yeah.
But he also had this other side where he was a Gryffindor and yeah. he was courageous and, you know, he chose that.
Yeah.
He could very easily chose the other path. And I think a big example of that is in the very first film, book, when Draco comes over and he says, I'll pick a good wizard for myself, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that was his first choice. Mm-hmm. And it's like all these little tests. And I think in real life, we always have these little tests.
Definitely. And
we have tests whether to judge someone. We have tests whether to befriend someone that we know is bad. Mm-hmm. We have tests where, you know, if we decided to change our lives and someone that maybe pulled us down in the past comes forward and says, oh, want to come to this, you know that's not going to yeah. be good for you. And yeah. that's them choices, these little tests that will
yeah.
ultimately change the outcome of your entire life. Like if Harry had befriended Draco, that whole book would have been, the whole yeah, season would have been
exactly.
different.
Like, everything. If you think of Hogwarts, it represented a lot of the school things that happened, yeah. you know? And I think that, like you said, we so had these choices. Like, I can remember having friends where I thought, you are bad for me. Mm. Like, you are literally,
yeah.
my decision-making is bolted here. This is not who I am.
Yeah.
But you go, that's yeah. my friendship group. And
I'll do it, yeah.
And then suddenly I remember, like, I'd move school and then I'd get into a better friendship group and I'd be yeah. like, oh, this is a lot better for me. Like, this is...
You know, I remember this from school as well, like, there was so many choices and parts where I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can look back and I can directly see the link where yeah. things went wrong.
Yeah, I've got a perfect example for you. So you know you met Ellen on Sunday.
Yeah.
So I was really good friends with her in Taunton, but she was like my out of school friend. Like we'd mm-hmm. walk to school together and stuff like this. Yeah. And it was so funny because some of my friends said that she was actually talking about it on Sunday. How I remember just before I was leaving, about 2 or 3 months before, I started wearing... eyeliner, mascara. Mm. I used to like walk to school with no makeup on, and then I'd go with this girl called Paige. Oh. And I used to like put on like all this like makeup, and then I try and take it off before, like when I was walking back home with Ellen, and like I was getting into weird groups and things like that. And we always say, me and her, that I left at the best time because then I met like my friend Rosie and things like that, because I was getting into a bad group, and yeah. like I probably would have made poor decisions if I'd have carried down in that route, but because we moved I didn't. But it's exactly, it is that, it is.
And then I think the Potters highlight that, and so that is one section where you know the moral code is set really well for children to understand from Potter. But I want to talk about JK Rowling a bit, because she gives me so much hope with life. And I think finding people that give you a bit of hope, not just because of her writing, but because of how she did it. So she was actually in an abusive relationship. Mm. She was in a council house with her daughter. She was really struggling.
Yeah.
And she sat down and she got these ideas and she wrote down these books and then eventually became one of the only billionaire writers, I think, that there was. She gives you that hope when you're like, because I'm obviously in my early to mid 30s, more so mid now. And I think sometimes I'm like, have I lost my way still? Have I found my purpose? And I know that when I was younger, all I used to do was read and write. And I think J.K. Rowling got that book didn't even get picked up straight away, Potter.
Wasn't it like she went to like 11 publishers or something like crazy and they all turned her down?
Yeah.
And she just kept going and kept going until someone gave it a chance. Like they basically said, like, it's just never going to happen.
Yeah. And I think just her journey by itself.
12. Oh, it's only one off. That's pretty good, isn't
that's
it?
Really, yeah. So 12 publishers she was turned down before they took her on and you know, got her the book. It says J.K. Rowling was turned down by 12 publishers before finding success with the Harry Potter books by Dana Hall. The life J.K. Rowling leads today is so foreign from the one she led in the 90s. Yeah. And I think that kind of shows you the power of yourself.
Yeah, and I know it sounds very easy. I think, like, it sounds very easy to say, oh, 12 publishers, but actually, if you think of when you're applying for a job, or for us, it's like auditions and things like that. When you think of going through like a whole job process and being turned down 12 times, it is grueling. Like
your baby, when
you've got no money, like you said, you're living in a council flat, like, you know, you've got no money.
Struggling.
This is your one dream, and people are going, nah, shit.
Well, that's the thing. It's like one thing. I heard on the TV the other day, it was actually from the Kardashians.
Huh?
And I'm normally like, oh, I can't be bothered. But actually, I think it was Khloe Kardashian said, if someone says no, you're asking the wrong person.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, because it's so easy to give up. Like, I've been trying to act since I was a kid. And we all know, I lost my way in my 20s, but I'm back and I'm pushing and blah, blah. And I still, to this day, even after strike, it's a bloody slog trying to get the auditions. You're always constantly relying and waiting on someone else. But I think there's so many people we can connect with. Like, just me connecting with you. Mm-hmm. We did Keep Calm and Carry On. We did All About Casey. Mm-hmm. And I'm still doing it. I'm doing what I love. And that's what matters.
Yeah.
You find the right person that has your back. Like, you've had my back from the minute we met. Mm-hmm. And you put me in two productions. And I've had the best time. I've learned so much. I've worked with those amazing people because you believed in me. Now, I wouldn't have met you if I'd given up ages ago.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
then you meet people that have your back. And then you end up doing something, whether it's what you wanted to be doing in that time.
Mm.
Like, with, I mean, as in, like, if you wanted to, for instance, you're like, oh, I just want to do Hollywood movies. That's not going to happen. Like, you don't just go, oh, I'm going to walk straight into Hollywood. If you want to be an actor, you're acting.
Yeah.
And we have made the most amazing productions, and I've learned so much, met so many amazing people. And that's all been off the back of trying to talk to people, trying to network, get my showreel together, sending it in. You never know who's going to have your back. That's what I'm trying to say. And I think that's the same with J.K. Rowling. 12 publishers said no, but then one decided this was good. And look, imagine being the 12 that turned her down.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and you never know what's going to happen.
It's the same with so many things though, isn't it? It's so many things that people turn down and then they become such massive successes.
Well, Jodie Comer, I was doing an acting workshop with Peter Hunt from the casting team at Hollyoaks.
Mm.
And he said one of our biggest regrets was we turned down Jodie Comer for Hollyoaks. And then she went on and became absolutely BAFTA Oscar. She won an Oscar? Well, she definitely got BAFTAs.
Yeah.
And she became Jodie Comer. She's one of the best actresses coming out of British TV. And it just shows you, it's not always about you. They're just looking for something else.
Yeah.
And that's the same with the publishing for J.K. Rowling. It wasn't necessarily about her. Well, it wasn't about her writing because it was bloody phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And look what it created.
Yeah.
Just synchronising the times, but give yourself them opportunities.
Yeah.
And she represents that for me.
And I think for so many people, like, you know, when they did the Harry Potter special, and I found it so emotional. Like, but not just, A, for the cast and how much they went through and growing up and what it's allowed them to have for their lives and such a big chunk of their lives, but also when you saw like the lines of kids who would queue up for these books, and like you said, it genuinely is the escapism that brought and this other world and joy and happiness and adventure, and it's incredible that one woman has given millions, and that was just, they were really showing it in like the UK. You think worldwide,
right,
what she has given to so many people, like us sat here now because of one woman sat down at a computer writing, or sat, I don't know what she was on, but whatever she was on writing. I mean, it's actually inconceivable. Like, I find it hard to even, I mean, I couldn't be her. Like, it's inconceivable, isn't it?
Well, could. This is the thing. You could create something that's just so, if you look, I think she gives hope, as in her story and how it came about gives hope to people.
Yeah.
But I think then it also comes in with this is self-discipline of making sure you get to the end of it, you keep going and don't give up. And if you have a belief in yourself, and I think that is when I reread The Potters now. As an adult, I still get a moral compass from reading the books. It's not like I'm rereading it just for the escapism. I love the escapism. But within that escapism, there's the moral code that we learn from a kid.
Yeah.
From, you know, make sure you're looking at the that quote I just said, you know, the it's our choices more than our, that show who we truly are far more than our abilities. Again, it's our choices. So I find sometimes I'm writing a book at the moment and I'm like, oh, I can't bother today. That's my choice then. I've now lost maybe 5-6 pages because I haven't done that.
Yeah.
But I know if I stick to that self-discipline every day for my future self, that's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
Who knows what will happen?
Completely. I have the same, like, I'll open up my emails and I think, I'm going to go for it now. Like, I am a lion. I'm going. And there's other times where I'll see, like, on my phone, I'll do that. Look, literally like that. That means that I've got an email from work. And sometimes I see that go off and I go, oh, I don't want to look at it, because it could be an agent saying no to me about an actor that I want, or it could be someone not being mean to me. I don't want to say it like that, but it can be very pressurized, and sometimes you can get the fear and you just want to hide under the covers and run away from it. So it's
and you're also a woman in her mid-20s and you're running your own company, so it's all on you. And you know, when I think people are going into working for themselves because they're doing it from passion and making a career out of that, it's scary because it's like someone's attacking your baby.
Exactly. And they're attacking you ultimately, and there's no one to like hide behind. It's not like, oh, it must have been them. It is you.
Like if you went to an authorship, you're like, oh, fuck it, Shelley can deal with that.
Like, yeah, you know. Exactly. You're like, oh, shit, you know, and it does represent you. And when somebody critiques maybe, well, any part of the process of what you've created, or same with J.K. Rowling, if someone critiqued one of the characters or their like story or their plot, it's attacking her because it's her brain and it's her baby and it's her creation. Yeah. So,
and I think it just shows that you've got to have that drive,
100%.
Self-discipline. I was listening to something about self-discipline today and I used to be so into that. Before I had a shitty 2 years, I was very self-disciplined. I'd get up, I'd do my run. Maybe I wasn't doing it in the most correct way of, as in like I was just trying to be fit and healthy overdoing it. So I'm always trying to find a balance within that. And I think maybe these 2 years of hardship, we've had to kind of pull back and figure out things a bit more, has been for a good reason. Again, finding a silver lining. And it's because, okay, I can put that into a different aspect of my life and use this self-discipline. Okay, I know that running 5K a day was probably a bit too much and I went too far on that aspect of the self-discipline. But what if I used the yoga in the morning and maybe a run every now and then, but use that other half that I've still got left to sit down and write my book and keep that brain focused?
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, I think it's finding the balance with that. I kind of lost my point with that. but absolutely.
But it's the same as I've lost it then, because I was thinking about you and I lost
it. I do. I get all over the place.
What was I going to say? Like the people that I trained with. Like I did train in musical theatre. So it's slightly different to what I've gone into now, but still the same industry. But they were so talented. And I can tell you, if the directors of where I trained were to have put a list, I would have been further down. They, you know, I was not the top runner where I was, they thought I was about to go and be this person. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was quite quiet. I, you know, I just wasn't top of the top. But what I suppose shed me apart to others who maybe haven't had success is that I just never stopped. Right. So there was just like every day it was on my mind. And I was so, whether that's because I had a bit of a chip or whatever it was, I was, or just drive and passion for it. I refused to not keep going. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
If you sit around the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut.
Yeah.
Right?
And that is also, and do you know who said, Jenna Fisher, who played Pam in the US Office?
Yeah.
She basically said she'd been out in LA for like 6 years, hadn't booked, I mean, she never booked even a commercial, like never booked anything, got to 8 years, still had booked nothing. And then she basically broke into a party. She was working in an office and she was a massive fan of Shannon Molly Shannon, who was at SNL at the time, and she actually was doing some of the papers for this party, and you couldn't go, so she actually ran in sick and then ran downstairs, put the dress on and went to this party just so she could meet Molly Shannon. And she said, like, I'm a massive fan of you, I've been in LA for 8 years, like, can you imagine, like, as well, you've up, you know, she moved hours and hours away. We're slightly different in the fact that we're still leading our lives, you know what I mean? Whereas she had uprooted her whole life, 8 years, hadn't booked one thing, and she's in LA and she goes to Molly Shannon, like, what, you know, tell me. And she was like, you just need to, like, you know, sit in the game, like, you just need to stay in it and it will happen. 11 years in, she gets the office.
Yeah,
hadn't booked anything else. She'd just been an extra to get her SAG and things like that. 11 years in of being in LA, she finally gets Pam.
And this is what I think so lovely about these stories, is because a lot of actors, me talking about myself here as well,
100%,
it is grueling. And you just think, sometimes I'm like, I'm 34 and I'm booking jobs, but sometimes financially it's a strain. Like, can I make my mortgage payments? Can I make my rent payments? Can I make my phone bill payments? And you really panic. But it
and
just
you've got
takes,
friends in other jobs who are then having kids, and they're at a different financial
going up
level
level
in their life,
ladder.
They're going up the ladder, and you're suddenly going, is this creative pursuit worth not being able to have that advantage and things like that? And it completely brings that into question.
Completely. And I had that literally maybe 3 months ago when my health got bad. I was just like, I don't know what to do anymore, and I really questioned everything in my life. And I just remembered when I got strike, my dad was really sick just before he passed, and I was thinking, I have to have something's got to come. And I made, it was so weird, I remember driving and I thought, I just had a breakup, and I was like, I just promise you, universe, give me an audition and I will work my ass off. Literally, I did that little prayer in the car. My email went off. I pulled over, read the email, and it was the audition for Strike. And I knew it was mine. When I realised it was written by J.K. Rowling, I sat down and I learned every single scene so I didn't have to panic about the recording. I learned everything. And I said to, there was 3 stages of self-tapes I had to do. And I did them, and I remember saying, this is my job. There was no option that was not my part. There was no option that I was not Gloria Conti under any circumstances. And I sat there, and I did my tapes, and then I got called in to meet the director, and I thought, just to read again. And I got in the room with Susan Tully, the director. She's done Line of Duty, she's done loads of stuff. And I sat down, and I was nervous, because in the room I always struggle more, because your nerves are there, because you need that job.
Yeah.
So I got my script down. She just, me and her, at Gary Davies' casting studio. My heart's like, girls, I'm going to F it up. I feel like I'm going to fuck it up.
Yeah.
And she went, oh, just to let you know, you've got the part. I just wanted to meet you. I could not tell you, my son, I was like, thank you so much. Like, I just didn't even know how to act. And I was just like, oh my God. Had the little chat with her about the character, where we're going to go from here to meet the other counterparts of our characters, blah, blah, blah. And then I left and I skipped down Angel High Street. I was on the phone to mom crying, skipping. And at that point in my life, I really needed something, because I had so much shit going on. I was just come out of lockdown. I was in a tiny little flat, my dad was really sick, and that's all I was doing. I was going through this break. I didn't know what to do. I was kind of a bit of a loss, and I got the job, and it changed like that.
Yeah.
And I think I know sometimes it can be grueling, but to hold on to something just like J.K. Rowling did, and keep going. If you always believe in yourself for your work, I think that's the main thing. And I was listening to a podcast the other day. Sorry, I'm blabbering on.
No, you
can. I listened to a podcast, I think it was this morning actually, and they were saying when you're doing. And Giles Paley Phillips, he talks about this. When you write about something for you, when you're writing a book, do it for you first.
Yeah.
And then there's been times when I've been writing something and I think, oh, will this sell well? Will I get in Times bestseller? Will I get this? It ruins it.
Yeah.
If I'm writing from my heart and keeping it just for me to write down what I think is good and resonates with me, chances are you're going to get a lot better work done and it's going to relate to more people.
Yeah. They always say, like, when you're creating, like, TV and film, like, a lot of people will think broad, but actually they say you need to make it as niche as possible, because actually that will relate to a larger market, basically. But I think what you're saying, you know, I think it completely comes back to what we're saying, because ultimately J.K. Rowling believed in herself. She used her magic and her situation to put this magic into all these books that then became films, and it just impacted and helped so many people. Ultimately, I think it did.
Yeah, agreed. And not just from her perspective, as us being readers and watchers,
we
created jobs for however many years, 11 something years
yeah.
of film publishing. Yeah,
it's about to do it
actors,
again. Yeah.
Theatre shows, yeah. Theme parks.
Yeah.
The amount of jobs that were created
yeah.
by her passion alone
yeah.
created this for so many people, yeah. changed so many people's lives.
And it's about to do it all over again.
Yeah.
There is about,
oh, it's giving me chills, you know, goosebumps.
But there is hundreds of people that are about to have a whole new life mm. because of the auditions and the parts that they're yeah. getting these new series.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be mad.
So there is magic around every corner.
Of course. And you have got, and I know it's like, when you're in those moments and people say, oh, you just got to keep going, you got to keep going. And sometimes you are bloody tired.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to keep going. But it is right. It is. Mm. Ultimately, you know, whether it's pick yourself up and send that one email that you've been dreading for a month.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying go and you know, try and accomplish whatever it is. But, you know, I've had it before where I've, whether that's I've felt bullied or whatever it is, and I've been hiding away from emails and things mm. like that, and I go, no, I'm just going to reply to that email today. That yeah. is what's on my to-do list. And once I've done that and I've then moved it to that folder, I can move on, and I you know,
yeah,
feel recharged. Or you get that email where they say, oh, that person will do that, and you go, oh my god, and then you want to go to the next or whatever it is.
Yeah,
you just got to keep that magic going,
keep that passion. Mm-hmm. And also, if it's not giving you like your monetary at that time,
yeah,
it doesn't mean that it's not worth it. You still can have your side yeah. hustles, which we all have to have,
yeah.
especially in the acting industry. And I'm trying to learn new things to get more strings to my bow. Mm-hmm. I want to learn maybe some things that you do, and I've mm-hmm. learned so much from you, and I want to look at maybe one day coming in, shadowing you and producing, just so I have other strings.
Yeah,
it's all part of that industry.
Yeah, of course.
But even with my writing on the side, you know, I sit yeah. and I have a passion for that. So I feel like I've got a story, and I feel like if I read it, that would help me. Mm-hmm. How many people can I learn from and yeah. do that for others?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think when you see the wider things of what you can contribute to the world,
yeah.
that gives you your fire.
I remember when we met Lawrence, who wrote Keep Calm and Carry On, and he obviously had written a lot of successful children's books, mm. and I would love to do a children's book.
Yeah,
I'd love to. Just I don't know why, I'd just love to do a children's mm. book.
There's another string for you on your bow.
I remember being so like when he was talking about it, feeling so like, oh, that's something I'd love to mm. do at some point in my life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%. Like, and I think we should always nurture that, because yeah. you never know what's going to spring from
and
these.
I think when you're creative,
there's a reason why you want to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I think when you're a creative, you're not just an actor. You are just creative.
Yeah.
So you just, it's just that you found it in, exactly.
Yeah.
So like you said, ultimately, I'm an actor. I just went into producing because I was getting fed up with the phone not calling. Do you mm. know what I mean? And I think
yeah.
that's the thing. I think all of us, where you find a lot of actors, go into directing and producing and writing and lots of, because ultimately we're all creatives.
You're creating a story.
Exactly.
Whatever medium that may be, yeah. whether it be through books and writing, yeah. whether it be through writing scripts, whether it be through acting the scripts out, whether it be through putting it all together to make the whole story itself, it's still storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a reason why you have a passion for that. And I think a lot of the time it's because of that escapism.
Yeah,
because
completely.
It takes you to that place of joy.
Mm.
And that's our reasoning.
Love it. Okay, I've got some cool, just weird facts about Harry Potter.
Love
you can't
it.
Look. You need
okay.
to look the other way. I've got them up like in front of Jess, so to see how you react to them. J.K. Rowling was actually considering, when she was writing, killing off one of the trio.
No.
Yeah.
That would have been depressing.
Can you imagine?
So glad she didn't.
That would have ruined the whole thing for me.
Yeah.
I'd have been like,
imagine no one or Hermione.
Exactly. Like, killed one of them off.
I can't imagine a world without one in a mind.
Exactly. So I just feel like, no, not happy about that. J.K. Rowling first wrote the names of the Hogwarts houses on a, like, sick bag in an airplane.
Did she?
Yeah. So she
oh,
was, like,
I like that.
Sat on a plane and she wrote down all the names, which I thought was a really cool,
yeah.
like, fact. And, oh, I think most people know this one, but I still think it's batshit that the woman from Bridget Jones who played Mona Myrtle, she was meant to be 14 and she was 36 when she played that part.
Was 36?
She was 36.
I always knew it was her from Bridget Jones.
Yeah.
But I was like, how does this age group work? But that's why, because she looks young.
Yeah. Rupert Grint has never seen any of his iconic giant spider scenes.
Why?
I don't know. I think because he doesn't
actually like spiders.
Why doesn't? I don't know, maybe.
The premiere, he must have shut his eyes.
Yeah, I think because he doesn't like spiders.
Yeah.
So Michael Jackson wanted to compose a Harry Potter musical.
Wow.
Mm. Have you watched
I haven't seen the
have
Curse
not?
Of the, what, I can't remember what it's called. The Curse of the Lost Curse of the Child.
The Cursed Child.
The Cursed Child.
Yeah. Yeah, The Cursed, I think it
is. Yeah, so. The show. No, I haven't seen it.
I looked at it, but it's like a full day thing. It's two,
very
3 hours
expensive
late,
as well.
isn't it? And so expensive.
Yeah.
But I would really like to. Hagrid was the first role cast.
Robbie Coltrane, rest in
He
peace.
made me so emotional in the special.
In a special, when he said, Hagrid, I won't live forever, but Hagrid will.
Oh
I
my
cried, cried my
gosh.
eyes out.
And basically when he said that made me quite emotional, because I think in this industry as well, that he kind of spent more time with those kids that were cast than like his own kids, because
Yeah.
that's what kind of happens, doesn't it, when you go on to projects for a long time. Is there anything else? J.K. Rowling's a Hufflepuff.
She's a Hufflepuff.
She's a Hufflepuff.
So have you done your?
Yeah, I'm Gryffindor. I've never been happier.
Do you know what I was?
Go on.
Ravenclaw.
That's
I'm not a
random.
Ravenclaw, am I?
I don't think you're a Ravenclaw.
But then I look at Luna Lovegood and I'm like, oh, maybe.
No, I
If
have
I
to
was going to be
admit,
closer to
like,
anyone, I think I'm a Luna Lovegood. Bit weird. Bit out there. Looking for spiritual meanings to everything. Googling. I saw a deer earlier. Me and
So
Jane went
there
for
you
a
go.
walk.
So
I saw a
there you go.
deer. It's
So you
like
are.
Googling spiritual meaning of the fact that I heard a woodpecker in the tree and saw a deer.
So there you are. You are a
I'm
Ravenclaw.
Luna
You need to
Lovegood.
own it. You need to own
I
it.
do.
No, I was Gryffindor and I was pretty. I just didn't want to be Slytherin.
Oh, same. But
Yeah.
when I was in Slytherin, when I was a kid, put in the background, it put me in
Really?
Slytherin.
Cute. Love
Yeah.
it. Well, guys, I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. I've absolutely loved recording this
Yeah,
episode.
going back to nostalgia and the nice
Yeah.
meaning between, it's been difficult the last few weeks talking about things that are quite troubling in society and et cetera. But
Yeah.
this has just been nice to explain a bit of escapism, a bit of joy that we sometimes feel guilt about having. And I think let's bring on the joy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we've chosen to do this on like the hottest week of the year, but it's soon going to be season to get that blanket up, get that candle on, and watch all the Harry Potter films.
Halloween is fast approaching.
Woo-woo. So yeah, guys, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this week's episode. If you are enjoying listening, then please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and give us what's it called
A
when
good
you
rating.
yeah a rating. Give us a
Subscribe.
5-star rating and
And also to
subscribe.
the Insta page.
Yes.
Do follow us at Let's Not Clear the Air. We'll be posting video from this episode and any little links. And also, I'll put a little clip of me in the background of Harry
Yes,
Potter.
amazing. And yeah, we can't wait to get back to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, guys, and we will see you all next week.
Make sure to subscribe to our Instagram, which is at let's.clearthe air, and make sure to subscribe to us on any platform where you listen to us. We're on all the major ones. And yeah, we can't wait to be back next week.